I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. England hammered Bulgaria amid ugly scenes. Liverpool and Man United face off, and Man City have a tricky one away to Palace. Welcome to the pod, everybody.
All right.
Luke Moore, Pete Donaldson, Jim
hey,
Campbell,
baby. Hello.
And me, Marcus Speller, in your ears.
How are you doing, Marcus? You all right?
Yeah, all right, thanks,
I worry
pal.
About you sometimes, tis all.
Why is that?
Because you're always out late at night.
That's not true.
With a weird shopping bag.
And also, look at you.
Yeah. Oh, I see. And not on the offensive, eh?
The smell as well. The smell.
How bloody dare you.
I worry about all of you.
I'll be worrying about you tonight at Guildford, mate.
We're going to Sheffield, mate, so you'll be fine.
Well, actually, Friday.
No.
Oh,
yes!
Just
help yourself to my lips, to my hands, just say the words and they are yours.
An early error from Luke Moore there, ladies and gentlemen.
I remember my first beer.
Strange thing to lie
Zinny,
about.
Zinny.
Yeah. Right, enough of...
Terrible by me.
Enough of the zingers, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As they say at KFC. Now, yes, I know it was a fair few days ago now, England beat Bulgaria. We'll do a little bit of an international roundup, though, but obviously there's still a lot of fallout from the ugly scenes of that game and so on and so forth. But I would like to say that makes a difference when you've got Harry Winks in there.
Yeah, it does. Yes. And it's something I've been calling... If anything, I'm the real victim here because I've been calling out for what happened.
Luke.
And it's been overshadowed.
By the spectre of worldwide racism.
No, you know, obviously the game was the game in England.
Bit of a sideshow in the end, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, really? England did a good job and they played well and you could tell, well, they didn't actually need to tell because some of the players have come out afterwards and said they wanted to let their talking happen on the pitch and teach Bulgaria a lesson and all the rest of it. But I thought England as a squad and as a representative of the country, they carried themselves with great dignity and there's a really fascinating article in The Athletic at the moment, which I would recommend you read about what happened behind the scenes, how England had planned to approach it. They had meetings about it, knowing it was probably going to happen and how they were going to deal with it. And they wanted to give the protocol that UEFA have installed a fair chance to happen and to work. And they did that. Now, whether you agree that that's the right way to go or not, I suppose it's a slightly different sort of subject, but they decided they wanted to and they carried themselves, like I say, with great dignity and class and more power to them, I say. I mean, the final thing for me on this, because obviously you guys have got something to say as well, I'm sure, final thing for me on this is just that I was a little bit sort of put out by the idea that because England has got its own problems about with racism and with intolerance and bigotry in 2019, which it absolutely has, and no question about that. How I was a bit sort of perturbed as to how that was set up as some kind of mutually exclusive thing, that it couldn't be criticised of how Bulgaria carried themselves, or how a section of the Bulgarian fans carried themselves, as well as some of their, you know, players and staff as well. I know something has come out since then where they've clarified it, but they didn't carry themselves at all well. I don't feel comfortable with the idea that we aren't able to criticise them because we've got our own problems. I think if anything, the whole thing feeds in together, and we should say, yes, we've got our own problems to deal with, but that is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And I think we did a fairly good job doing that. And I hope we've set a bit of an example there. And it's not often you get a chance to say that about England. And I think hopefully we have done that.
Yeah, absolutely. Full credit to the squad at the backroom staff and Gareth Southgate as well. It's potentially an absolutely seismic moment because this protocol has been in place for 10 years. This is the first time it's been used. And, you know, it was in an earlier game. Was it the Montenegro game?
Yep.
Where they didn't know what the protocol was, when they were getting very frustrated by it. So they've made a point to learn about it and enact it. No one's done it before. And I completely agree with you, Luke. I think it's fair and right that England or anybody trying to enact the protocol gives it a chance rather than just say, oh, UEFA don't do enough, which they don't. I mean, Greg Clark after the game. I think he had to choose his words quite wisely, didn't he? Because he wasn't too critical of UEFA, but obviously he has to carry forward a working relationship with them. So I would imagine behind closed doors, he would agree that they probably definitely don't do enough. But I'm really interested to see what happens next. Mm-hmm. Will there be a game that's abandoned? Will this protocol be enacted by any other nations, or will it feel like England are sort of isolated in doing that? And
I'd definitely like to see referees be a little bit more proactive. I mean, it shouldn't be down to, you know, Mings or whoever. No.
Tyrone Mings on his debut. What an amazing statement.
What a performance kind of situation. I mean, if you want a bit of a giggle, look at the Sun or the Daily Express sort of saying, we are disgusted by this racism in Bulgaria. Yeah. But also, if you want to look at UEFA.com, the executive committee, the state of that. I mean,
the shade
it's
of it.
Just 30 to 40 men. Couple of women in there,
all white.
It's diversity at the very core of UEFA. I think
they probably don't see it as a problem at all.
Well and
never
also
experienced any racism
in
these halls.
We kind of, again, like Luke said, we shouldn't be worried about we should be allowed to criticise other nations and how they sort of deal with stuff. But I think in many situations it is a problem with diversity, and mainland Europe does have a more laissez-faire attitude when it comes to dealing with racist abuse. Look at how Italy deals with its own problems. And actually, the UEFA official at that match was the person from Italy. So it's not moving very quickly, but it does come from diversity from the top.
Some of the really worrying things I would say that came out of the game specifically were things reported that, you know, some of the ultras of certain teams in Bulgaria were doubling up and working as stewards at the game. Yeah. And this whole thing had been pre-planned. I mean, you saw a guy holding up a pre-made like jumper. Yeah.
And, no respect.
Yeah.
Well, somebody made the point that they'll probably get fined for the incorrect use of a UEFA copyright.
Yeah. But I do. The reason I bring that up is not to try and trivialise any aspect of it, but just to say, I'm sorry, but there is a difference between if you have 10,000 people in a stadium and 20 of them act the idiot and I'm being racist. I understand it's very difficult to predict that and deal with it and in at the time. I get that. I think everyone can understand that. You can't police every single human being. Mm. But if something is so obviously pre-planned as it was in this game, to the point of where the opposition team, in this case England, are having meetings about with the squad saying, this is probably going to happen. What are we going to do about it? Then it should be dealt with firmly and swiftly.
Huge.
And it should be done with very, very harshly as well.
And it seems that like they left just before half time, the organised kind of hooded kind of figures.
Yeah. It was quite a chilling scene, wasn't it?
It was clearly an organised kind of fucking Proud Boys bollocks kind of Eastern European, like or just European situation. But like they seem to... Because if you can't evict like 50 or so men in hoods who have decided to monkey chant stuff like that, you can't just evict them by saying, come on, lads, you've had your fun, get out.
Yeah.
It was clearly designed to get them to the precipice of the third warning and then leave because they had the two warnings and then those lads fucked off.
It was weird, wasn't it? Because they sort of, in one sense you thought,
They sort of went quite quietly, but actually, yeah. I think what you're saying is probably
and the fact that we have to somehow like measure Monkey Chance in decibel levels before it's a problem.
Well, I think absolutely. I think if you take a step back and say, put it in any other kind of environment, any kind of environment of performance, where people are actually going to do a job they're professionally paid to do, and the protocol is if they do it three times. The thing gets to get banned. Mm. There's never an idea. When we go and do our live show tonight, if we go up on stage and we have people of colour or ethnic minority people involved in our show, and there's monkey chanting, so we go, oh yeah, we'll give you two more chances, thing's off. Yeah. It doesn't happen. Football seems to exist in this vacuum on this kind of stuff, but I do think the UEFA protocol is important and something that should be seen as a step in the right direction to try and make it better than the situation is at the moment. But ultimately as well, I don't want it to get lost, but it's a separate issue and nothing is more important than in this case people being racially abused. That is the most important thing to stamp out. But in terms of the football, England were fantastic. They played very well. Like, it's easy to forget. I mean, they could have scored 10 goals. They literally could have scored 10.
Well, they were geared up for that, weren't they? They were clearly trying to score a lot of goals. Absolutely. I mean, there was a point where Tyrone Mings had a marauding run forward. He's like, yeah, we know what you're doing. Good on you. Go for it.
I enjoyed Ross Barkley doing a very subtle sign to the fans.
It goes back to what we were saying last week, you guys. I can't remember which one of you guys said it, but get into the system that you know you can play well, get to know it, play it. Mm. Fair enough, you have to change the personnel occasionally because you've got injuries or unavailability or different types of opposition. Play it and play it well. And as soon as England do that, they look great. And they did. It was no coincidence. They went back to that formation and they look great.
Bulgaria are terrible as well, by the way. I mean, that is the ultimate caveat that Bulgaria are a legitimately bad team.
Yeah.
But Harry Winks did make a huge difference. I would really like to see him.
If you look at Bulgaria's results in the group, I don't think they've won a game. I think they've drawn three. I think they've only got 3 points.
That's correct.
They've actually not been hammered by anyone else other than England. So they're not a sort of San Marino or Liechtenstein-esque side. I know they're not by the size of the population and the history of football in that country.
They've only lost by one goal.
So actually, obviously England should be winning that game, and they did, but actually 6-0 away, I understand there was other bits and pieces going on and so on. And it obviously negatively affected, well, certainly at least one Bulgarian player, the captain, of course, at half-time was seen and was praised by, I think, Marcus Rashford. He tweeted that, shouldn't be forgotten. But it's still a good win for England. Mm. And England, obviously, on the verge of qualifying is what we expected. But, I mean, I think it was, oddly, I think that some of the England players, they've said that despite all the stuff that goes on with England fans, and England fans are far from perfect, and Friday night in Prague, you know, and the xenophobic chants and all that kind of crap in it, and so on. But there does seem to be some more of the non-dickhead England fans, which there are a fair few of.
There's loads of non-dickhead Bulgaria fans.
Well, of course there is. But there seems to be a good bond between players and fans in England at the moment with the away support, which is great. Mm. And I understand the kind of people saying that Marina Hyde wrote a brilliant piece, as she does, about the sort of hypocritical nature of some of the English press and so on, and certainly some of the England fans and some of their chants, and I get that. I don't disagree with that. But other countries have used in the past, we're probably going back a few decades, they have actually pointed the finger at fans, namely England fans, actually, and gone, look at them, we don't want that, that is just great. And those countries, among other efforts and their own good works and so on, have brought their fan bases into a far better place whilst also kind of condemning one or two others. So there may be an element of that going on. Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. But yes, you're right. England, they just need a point at home to Montenegro to qualify. Of course, then they go to Kosovo after that. And it's likely that Kosovo and Czech Republic will battle it out for that second spot. They face each other next. It'd be remarkable if Kosovo, soon onto the footballing stage, if they could get to a major tournament. It'd be absolutely phenomenal.
A team that came into our consciousness, of course, when famously Romario scored a hat-trick against them.
So Kosovo and Czech Republic still could qualify. Let's move on then to Ireland. They lost to Switzerland 2-0. They need to beat Denmark at home to qualify. Yeah. That didn't bode well last time, Jim.
No,
they needed
didn't.
To beat Denmark at home.
Marcus, you and I had a little debate last week. Was it Monday or was it the week before, where I said, look, I think they flatter to deceive a little bit and they don't score enough goals. And you said, I think fairly, look, it looks like they're going to need to beat Denmark at home in the final game to go to the Euros, and they probably would have taken that before before the qualification cycle started. And then lo and behold, Mick McCarthy actually said that. He said that in the press conference. He said, look, we need to be at our very best to beat Switzerland here, and we weren't.
And the Swiss are a decent side.
And the Swiss are good. Yeah, and he said, but if you had said to me before, you got one game at home to win, to qualify, I'd have taken it.
Yeah.
So well, that's obviously Wales, what he's been targeting.
Wales could find themselves in a similar situation. They could. Hungary a little bit more to.
But it's a high-risk strategy, Marcus, for Ireland and for Mick McCarthy.
Well, it is, but it's a strategy that Roy Hodgson used for England when they qualified for 2014, I think it was.
He came into the soccer very late, though, didn't he?
Yeah, well...
oh, no, he didn't actually. He came in 2012, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. 2012 he came in. But it was when England, they went away to Ukraine, and after that, they played, I think it was Montenegro, wasn't it? And then Poland. It was definitely Poland. I think it was Montenegro before that. And he knew that going away to Ukraine, England weren't in great shakes at the time. And he thought, right, let's not lose the game. We can win it, but let's not lose it. And they drew 0-0, and he was really pleased, and he got hammered by the press. And he was basically saying, well, that sets up just us needing to win against Montenegro and Poland to guarantee it, which, of course, they did. So I think that someone like McCarthy, when he's looking at this, he knows that there's not goals in that side. He's no fool, even though he sometimes makes us believe he is.
Well, it's a heartbreaking end to the game, though, isn't it? It's not ideal preparation, really. Seamus Coleman getting sent off, and then Randolph saving a penalty, and then a late own goal.
Yeah.
Like it's all a bit calamitous. And
that
a bit
group
of shame
is mad, isn't it?
It's an anomalous group because you've got, if you look at the list of teams who are top of their group and how many goals they've scored, it's unbelievable. I mean, England got 26, Ukraine are on 15.
Ukraine have been quite impressive.
They've been great. Netherlands have been 19, Croatia on 14. Spain on 19, Poland on 13, Turkey on 16, Belgium on 30, Italy on 25, Republic of Ireland have got 6.
Yeah.
They've scored 6 goals in 7 games, and they're top,
top of their group. It's
but Denmark and Switzerland have got extra games to play.
Yeah, but also as well, I think, you know, having seen Ireland play a few times recently, like, they just don't look like they're a team that is good enough to be at the Euros. And that's, you know, it might sound a little bit harsh on them, but, you know, that
Jim,
six goals is a huge indictment there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Denmark play Gibraltar, which they'll win, and then Ireland, and Switzerland face Georgia at home, and then Gibraltar. I would have thought the Swiss would get maximum points, which is why Ireland will need to beat Denmark, of course. So it's an interesting one there. Elsewhere, Timo Pukki. And Finland are on course for a first major tournament as well.
Which seems weird, given how massive Finland is.
Yeah, the population's quite small.
Yeah,
though.
Still though, you know, I'm quite a simple man.
But, I think once you look at the group they were given, I know Bosnia have got their strengths and got their good players. Armenia as well, decent enough. Greece have been difficult in
a
difficult match for ages.
Greece, aren't they?
And then Liechtenstein out of concern. Finland could have fairly gone, well, do you know what? This is a really good chance for us because the top two qualify automatically, as we know, because of the expanded tournament. Mm-hmm. And Italy are going to be far and away as they were.
Yeah. You just need to beat Liechtenstein at home.
That's it.
Which
surely they'll do. Yeah, they're 5 points above Armenia when they beat them 3-0. Yeah, phenomenal to see. You could see what Kosovo is still in there. Finland, you know, new nations. I understand the tournament's expanded and you know stuff
We talked on the continent yesterday about how well Ukraine have done to Shevchenko and how well Poland have done and how this is probably Lewandowski's last chance of a big impact on a tournament because he's been their best goal scorer in history, but he's not really ever done it at a tournament. So if you haven't heard that yet, do check it out on yesterday's episode. And the Finland thing's really interesting because I mean, I might be. Hopefully, I'm not wrong here. But aside from Timo Pukki, I can't think of a single other Finnish player that's playing at a very, very high level. I mean, I think Glenn Kamara plays for Rangers, doesn't he? That's the only one I can think of. So,
is Jari Litmanen on the bench?
Yeah, get him out. Wheel him out.
But yeah, I mean, just thinking of Timo Pukki at the tournament, it's starting to get me a little bit excited.
Oh,
sort of little things on the road to that, like froth of excitement.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, of course, there are teams who will be in the playoffs, and there's a big old pool to go into the playoffs. 16 teams will compete for the last 4 places at the Euros when all's sort of done and dusted, which it will do next month, I believe. But yeah, so the playoffs, it's a funny one. There'll be 4 sets of 4 teams, if you see what I mean. And then, so each set will play
semi-finals, which will be two-legged affairs, semi-finals, and then that goes into a final, which is, of course, a one-off game. So the winners of each final will take the last spots. As it stands, if the groups end as they currently stand...
It's not decided until the groups are finished, though, is
it? Of course.
Yeah.
But as it currently stands, and if you look through the groups, it's unlikely there's going to be that much movement. There could be a little bit, of course. Yeah. Ireland's group, a good example of that. But as it currently stands, Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland will all be in the playoffs. Also...
Scotland are guaranteed anyway, aren't they?
Yeah. Also Switzerland, but again, there could be movement there. Iceland, Norway, Serbia, Bulgaria. Bulgaria, you see, the UEFA Nations League. Mm. You know, that's why it was important. Mm. Romania, Kosovo, among others. So the playoffs will be quite an interesting affair.
I think the guaranteed teams are Scotland, Georgia.
Bulgaria.
And Belarus, I think. Not Bulgaria.
Well,
Bulgaria are in there as things stand, but they're not guaranteed.
Oh, they're not getting. No. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Let's
not get into that because it is particularly complicated.
And San Marino are guaranteed as well.
Yeah, get on. Get Marino in.
Having
there.
Not won a single game.
well, of course, World Cup qualification is underway in some parts of the world.
Paging Pete Donaldson. Paging Pete Donaldson.
We're off to the Far East. We are off to the Far East.
What have I done?
What have you done?
North Korea and South Korea. It ended goalless. There was no media at the match. There were no fans. There were no girls. The match was not broadcast.
No girls.
There was no fans. Well, no nobody fans. Was there.
No, no girls, no boys.
The first
no
time they've played since 1990, I believe.
In North Korea.
In Pyongyang.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Although, Pete, you've managed to see the game.
I thought I had, but thinking about it, I might have just seen the reverse fixture in Seoul or possibly
well,
Japan.
Well, I did
were
wonder.
Fans there?
No,
there weren't any fans. No.
Okay.
I did wonder because I was going to say, if there's no media, no fans, and no goals scored, can we guarantee the game actually happened because it wasn't broadcast?
Well, Son Heung-min said it did.
Yeah, okay. Well, in which case, I'll take his word for it. But I am not taking Pete Donaldson's word for it, who claims to have watched it this morning.
in my mind.
On, Pete was like,
maybe
it
was a wild dream. I just remember the North Korean keeper doing some amazing world league saves, but that may have been the reverse fixture.
Yeah.
And there may have been people in the stadium. I don't know. My brain's just a big forest of nonsense. But I quite like the fact that Pyongyang was going to provide them with a DVD at the end at the end of the match. To,
probably be a
to sort of
match.
Go with the... of the match.
Edited in a load of goals here, and your players look distinctly like the 1970 Brazil side. It was interesting. North Korea's official news agency issued a brief report the morning after the match saying the qualifier ended in a 0-0 draw after a series of attacks and counter-attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I presume we're talking about the match.
It really sounds made up.
I was thinking that. There's an interesting piece on it and how it pertains to the current political situation between the two nations on Pod Save the World this week.
Right, yeah.
With Tommy Vito and Ben Rose, which I mean, I very rarely recommend a non-stick half podcast, but it was interesting to hear about.
I like Ben Rose.
He's brilliant.
He's got a super-sized brain.
Yeah, he's got a super-sized
really
brain.
He runs
as well.
His mouth.
He knows everything.
Gianni Infantino was at that.
I know. Yeah. I wonder about that.
Well, I suppose because somebody needed
great
to make
fishing.
Sure that
great the fishing
that
existed.
Well, somebody needed to kind of. Validate it.
Yeah,
Marcus, revenue streams.
Yeah.
And that as well.
Yeah.
But Son Heung-min said, this is the kind of language. He said, North Korean, he's saying it was a very, very aggressive game. He said the North Korean players were sensitive and aggressive. There was a lot of severe swearing.
Ooh. Sounds like a sexual congress.
And then he said, it was like war. I was like, oh, come, Son, don't.
Yeah. Son.
Not that kind of.
Leave it.
For I've a man who skipped military service, that's a bit fucking rich.
Well, and then Paolo, is it
he
Paolo?
He got out of military service because they won
the medal.
Did they
got
win?
Gold
no.
medal.
Oh, was
yeah,
it?
They, yeah, yeah. Got out of it.
All right,
and then Paolo Bento, the Portuguese coach of South Korea, was annoyed at his team and he went, we didn't execute the blast. I said, not that language! Gordon Bennett.
Oh, dear. It's all just a big shame.
It is. And speaking of shame, let's have some emails with PED.
Yeah. Oi, that's not nice.
That's shameless. Email show at footballrambledaily.com.
And now Pete is reading it out. Well done. Well done. Robert Nicholson has come in with an email. Have we talked about Bulgaria's controversial president, Boyko Borisov?
He's gone.
Back in the day.
Oh, sorry, the president. Yeah,
yes, the president who obviously...
Yes.
Raheem Sterling praised the Bulgaria's controversial president, Boyko Borisov, after he called for the head of the Bulgarian Football Federation to resign. I thought, in case you weren't already aware, I thought I'd bring attention to Mr. Borisov's own strange footballing career. He is, as far as I'm aware, the only European League leader who has a current page on Transfer Market. This year, after founding his political party in 2007, Borisov made his debut for amateur Bulgarian third division side FC Vitosha Bristra, the Tigers, despite having been born in 1959. According to his Wikipedia, he went to rack up 23 appearances and 27 goals as the Sofia-based team worked their way up to a professional level over the next few years.
27 goals?
He's actually got 23 appearances, 27 goals, so it's not too bad. But again, you know, you can massage those numbers when you're the president.
And again, Pete, you do not check the veracity of any of these emails.
He had a season ticket.
Yeah. However, the crowning moment of his career came in 2013 when he made use of his increased free time since he lost an election to get involved in his first professional appearance for Vitosha, playing the first 54 minutes of a game against Rakovska in 2011. At the age of 54, it made him the oldest professional in the history of the sport in Bulgaria.
That rings a bell. I think we mentioned it
back in the day. I think we might have done. Yeah. He's seen Cooley slotting away a penalty in a YouTube video, so there we go.
Doesn't matter how old you are, you can still do that.
So fighting the dog. Hello to Sean. Am I tripping, or is Gareth Southgate the perfect fit to be a Manchester United manager? Just washed over me at 1 a.m. on Tuesday night.
I think never emails again.
Yeah,
I think
there's you may have taken some psychedelics.
No, but I do you know what? You know what's going on in the hierarchy at Man United at the moment? It wouldn't be an amazing surprise.
And they would overspend on it. Yeah. They would overspend on it.
Poor old Gareth. Leave him out of it.
Yeah. Matt Lachlan. Hey chaps, I'm currently living in Japan. I just wanted to share something that me and my brother have had a lot of amusement with over the past few years. Excuse me. In Japan, there's an arcade game called WCCF Futista, the World Club Championship Football, which I can only describe as a mix between collectible card games, PES, and Football Manager. Basically, I've seen these machines. They're really cool. It's like a big kind of, you got a pitch in front of you, screens like PES or FIFA, and you've got these little cards and you move them around to adjust your tactics and adjust your players. But you can get like legendary players from the whole, you know, the history of football. Mm. Anyway, each card has its own unique skill, and this is actually what I wanted to share with you guys. As me and my brother find collecting these as much fun as actually collecting the cards and playing the game. The legend card are much funnier than any of the other cards. Can you see this? Gordon Banks has got obviously a goalkeeper. For every card, they've got like a little skill, like a beautiful, like poetic sentence.
Yeah.
The patron saint of saves. Teddy Sheringham. Skill. Charlotte Golmus.
Sherlock Golmus. Okay, Golmus. Yeah. Wow. Sherlock Golmus. Yeah.
Ian Rush, the goal mine. Ian Rush, the goal mine. David Seaman, Mr. Safe Hands. And also Alan Shearer, Knight in Shining Armour. Oh. Gary Nicker, the Killer Bee. And finally for now, Bobby Moore, the Ultimate Captain. I've got a Shea Given
bee.
One.
The Killer Bee?
Yeah. Wu-Tang?
Yeah. I've got a Shea Given one. It's very funny. I can't remember what it says though.
Oh, good.
But I did want to see a man dressed in a full matching tracksuit in front of one of these machines, like he was actually the manager of the team, which was very enjoyable.
I told you about the guy who used to live with at uni who, before cup final... I remember walking in on him playing Football Manager at like 8 in the morning and even up all night, and as I walked in he was so annoyed and frustrated with this team conceding a last minute goal, he was spitting on his computer monitor.
It wasn't Tiggy Rainbow.
Wow. Yeah, it was
Tiggy Rainbow.
Big Tig. Wow. Big Tiggy style.
For older or more well versed ramble listeners, you'll remember the name Tiggy Rainbow.
Yeah. If you'd like to get just a short, it's shortfootballrambledaily.com.
There we are. Now it's time for a break, Peter.
Oh,
I'll see you as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway.
Yeah, and we were at Sheffield last night, and it was brilliant.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
So tonight we're at Guildford, and then tomorrow night we're at High Wycombe. There's another, I think, five shows after that in the
Norwich,
UK.
Norwich, Birmingham, Manchester.
And somewhere else. Yeah, Leeds.
And Newcastle.
Leeds and Newcastle.
Loads.
So the point is, the shows are, they are running out fast. So if you do want to come to any of those dates, do go to ramblelive.com to get your tickets. Of course,
Norwich.
We're doing three shows in the US and one in Canada at the start of November as well. Available tickets at the same link, ramblelive.com. Don't sleep on it. Don't miss your chance.
No.
Who knows when we'll be back, if ever. So that's ramblelive.com.
We're coming to America, as Neil Diamond once sang.
Mm.
Did he really?
He did. How about that? Now then, back to the Premier League, everybody. International football's over for another month. And we've got a big one. We've got a big one on the Sunday. It's Manchester United versus Liverpool. Mm. Is it still a big one? It is, isn't it? It is,
yeah,
because Liverpool are involved.
Yeah.
David De Gea and Paul Pogba are going to miss out. They got injured.
Don't need him. Don't need him.
But it's got to the point with Man United where it's so bad that when I saw that, I thought, yeah, they don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
They just don't want to be involved.
That is bad for the brand.
De Gea's a miss. He will be a miss. There's no doubt about that. Alisson and Matip could be fit for Liverpool, though.
Yeah.
Alisson coming back in. Bit of a shame for Adrian. He's made the odd mistake, but he's had a good time.
No, he's an able deputy, isn't he? And he's shown that. It was a very canny signing, actually. But Man United are unbeaten in their last five home league meetings with Liverpool, which is kind of surprising. I think Mo Salah has failed to score or assist a goal in his four Premier League appearances against Man United. So actually, you know, I think we're all looking at this as like a potentially comfortable Liverpool win that could even maybe be quite embarrassing for Man United. But I don't know that that's necessarily how it's going to play out.
Yeah, it rarely happens like that with these two sides, isn't it?
The last time I remember Liverpool winning at Old Trafford,
that was when it was the final nail in Mourinho's coffin, wasn't it?
No, they didn't win at Old Trafford then, did they?
That was Anfield. It was Anfield.
Yeah, they beat Man United heavily at Old Trafford. I think it was under Moyes, and it was when Gerrard had three penalties and he scored two and missed one of them. They won 3-0. I think Suarez scored the other one. And although it was 3-0, which of course is a fairly big defeat when you're at home, it could have been, I mean, Liverpool were brilliant that day and Man United were very poor. And I think, I said yesterday on the Continent, just because they were talking about Max Allegri, that it's a bit of a red herring, this game, because if Man United get out of this game and it's not the end of the world, so they'll get beat 2-1 or whatever, right? People expect that. I know it's another defeat, but Liverpool are a very good team. After that, they go away to Norwich and away to Bournemouth. To me, they're the problematic games. I mean, how Solskjaer lifts them, gets them playing to a style and a tactic that suits them while simultaneously not losing under the pressure of teams they should be beating away from home, to me, is a bigger ask, I think. So this game will be interesting, but I still think Liverpool have got far too much for United. And providing they don't kind of get sort of rabbit in the headlights about it, that they should win very well.
Yeah, I think that Manchester United fans or some Man United fans will find it an intriguing one. Obviously, they don't want to lose, especially not to Liverpool. However, if they did get tonked, it might sort of
hurry things up for the board, maybe replacing Solskjaer.
Mm.
I know he's not gone yet, so not the time of recording. But
it's funny because they keep saying that it's not, they're not even thinking about that.
Yeah,
but they know they are.
But it would be sort of a fitting of the situation if Manchester United actually got a creditable draw,
mm.
who came back from 2-0 down to win 2-0, and the Stretford ends rocking, and actually they go, oh, hang on a minute, and you go, actually, that's in the long term, that's probably a curse rather than a blessing, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
So, see, Mike Ashley was hanging out with Woodward recently.
Yeah. Oh, what a pair of drinkers.
Mike Ashley.
Pair of power drinkers.
Certainly rounds of drinkers. sort of. Mike Ashley.
Drankers.
Mike Ashley saying about Woodward, introducing him to a third party, saying, oh, look, it's the second and first most hated men in football. It's just,
when you say,
you're not Vince McMahon, mate. We literally hate
Peter,
you.
When like, you say a third party, that is like they've just gone round
right, okay,
different
third
places.
Party, yeah.
Literally at their third party.
Yeah, exactly.
Been kicked out of two before.
I think my impression of most of the country is that Edward was fairly well liked, isn't he? I think he's that. Oh, by the way,
actually, he's very popular in Sunderland.
Yeah, I should say that Betway, our sponsors, have an offer on this game, which is well worth checking out. If you back a team to win and that team scores first, Betway will pay out and settle the market as a winner, regardless if that team ends up drawing or losing. Yeah. So all it needs to happen if you back a team in that market is they need to score first. And if they do that in Man United v Liverpool, then they'll pay out. So it's worth having a look. Betway.com for more details. Yeah, click on the Premier League bit.
I've seen that some articles and papers are suggesting that Sadio Mane and Mo Salah have still got a bit of
beefles
after that sort of business at Burnley, really? And not passing the ball. And they put the stats and they said, you know, neither has assisted the other one this season. But if you actually look at the stats, I think Mo Salah only assisted Mane like once last season. Right? You see what I mean? He's completely misleading.
But yeah. Listen, Marcus, if you want a job being a content editor for one of these viral video and content agencies, you're going to have to start making stuff up like that,
Okay.
or you'll be out of a job pretty fast.
We're starting to do it on the Twitter.
Yeah, we'll start to do it. We've been doing it for years.
Sadio Mane did say after the Burnley game that Klopp asked him into the office, and he said, because he said like Mo Salah and him, that they're friends and they text and call as friends do, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm led to believe.
Sometimes.
And he said that when I told him that we'd already sorted out, he said Klopp was pleasantly surprised.
Oh, really? I also saw that Mo Salah, it must have been some kind of fancy dress party, but him and his daughter went as two characters from Moana. Well, obviously his daughter went as Moana, and he went as the character played by The Rock. I can't remember his name, but it was very cute.
Oh, very
adorable.
Good. So there we are. That sort of wraps up the preview.
I think Liverpool will win very well. And the fact that it's at Old Trafford doesn't bear any problem. I think on paper, no, the game's not played on paper. I know we've gone into games thinking a team's going to win big and it's not quite happened. But Liverpool they're just clicked. They know, everyone knows their jobs. They play at an amazing tempo. And given that United have also got problems with availability of players, Liverpool, I think, should win this game.
Well, Manchester United, what they should do is what they did when Solskjaer first took the job, is play massively on the counter.
And they've lost that now for some reason, haven't they?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit strange, but that's what they should definitely do for this game.
And they could do that. They could get away with doing that against Liverpool. I understand if you're playing at home to Sheffield United, you can't do that. But Liverpool
won every Premier League game thus far. So, and they are the European champions and currently favourites to probably win the Premier League. So if you were a bit defensive, even if it was at home, that could be forgiven. Mm. But they've still got players on the break that a bit of pace and so on, Manchester United. But yeah, I mean, it's all set up for a...
It's a big ask.
It is a huge ask indeed. Manchester City go away to Crystal Palace. Now, Man City lost 2-0 at home to Wolves, of course, last time round in the Premier League.
Feels forever ago, doesn't
it? It does, yeah. The international break will do that to you, Jim. Mm. You feel refreshed, don't you? They normally bounce straight back with aplomb, as we saw against Watford when shortly after they lost to Norwich. But I'd like to suggest something, that Roy Hodgson and Palace are actually, they are a tricky opponent for Man City, the way kind of Hodgson sort of sets up. If you look at the results I think these are all in the league, since Hodgson joined Palace, they're head-to-head with Manchester City. The first game they lost, Crystal Palace lost 5-0 away at the Etihad, but Hodgson, he'd been in the job less than 2 weeks. I think he'd been 10 days in the job.
Mm.
Then their next game, they drew 0-0 at home.
And I should have won that.
Milivojevic, with a missed penalty in
that,
the last minute, And then last season, of course, they won 3-2 at the Etihad with that Andros Townsend screamer. And then they lost 3-1 at Selhurst Park. That was towards the tail end of the season, and Man City were on course for the treble and so on. So actually, Hodgson, there's been a couple of interesting results there. Mm. And it's usually quite a decent match between
they
these two.
They go and get pumped. Marcus, right. I appreciate your endeavours,
yeah,
but they go and get pumped.
Late Townsend winner. Late Townsend winner.
It'll have to be late.
But it's, yeah, I mean, you worry about the kind of wounded animal aspect of it.
Well,
yeah.
I did say
every
that at the
time
start.
They have hammered teams. Yeah.
Is there an argument that the international break getting in the way of that might?
Yeah, maybe.
That. There's an enormous argument to be had there.
Yeah, I can't imagine Pep could get a team
all
up for him.
All I'm saying is Hodgson has Guardiola's number.
the game
and
before
he'll speak to him in Spanish.
You know the 5-0 game that you mentioned after Hodgson taken the job?
That doesn't count.
They lost 5-0 the game before that as well, I think, to Man City.
I was talking about when Hodgson became the manager.
Mm. Sure, okay.
Yeah.
But it's quite selective, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, no, that was my whole...
Check my data sets, guys.
That was my whole thesis, was that Hodgson's Palace...
Listen, you've submitted your thesis.
Yeah.
We'll see what grade you get on Monday, won't we? you might be skipping into the studio with an A, mate. Yeah, on the other hand, you might get an F.
Well... Yeah, ungraded. So if they lose by one or two goals, I think that I've made my point.
Okay, yeah, fine.
Right, okay.
I'm even happy to say that.
Is that right? what do you think is going to happen?
I think that, to be honest...
Say something outrageous.
Yeah, I think that, given it's at Selhurst Park,
yeah.
I think it will be closer than... It's not going to be a whooping, I don't think. But I think Man City will stick to their task and emerge victorious.
Mm, I would agree.
PT?
Pump City.
Pump City?
Yeah. Population Hodgson.
Yeah.
Slash Speller.
Purely because I can't get away from the idea that City, they've got a big problem at centre back. They've got a big problem at centre back.
Absolutely.
And I think if the likes of
Christian Benteke scored. He scored against San Marino.
Jordan Ayew and Christian Benteke. He won't play two up front, but if he did, yeah.
You've got Andros in there. Yeah.
Very weird to see Benteke score, wasn't it? And the fact that he's in the Belgium squad.
Yeah. Fair play to him, Jim. Mm.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, he's played his way back in.
Apparently so.
He's not a very good player.
I wonder if Alexander Zinchenko's calmed down yet.
You see this? I enjoyed
Carl Walker was fuming with him. Carl Walker was absolutely fuming with him.
He wasn't fuming.
Well, did he say I ran my first beer or something?
Took the piss out of him, yeah.
Yeah, he's not fuming.
How do you know?
Because quite clearly that's not...
Carl's an angry man.
Is he? Because he wasn't in the England squad.
No, despite that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If anyone has seen this, do check it out. Zinchenko just singing and dancing on after Ukraine, you qualified for the Euros.
Rightly so. No,
of course. But it just seemed like
went on forever.
Yeah, if any news feed went to any part of Ukraine, and here we are in the downtown, he suddenly would pop up.
Yeah, and also the woman in the video is his girlfriend.
That's right,
as well, which is just great.
But he didn't do that kind of like dickheadish thing of like giving her a hug and all that shit, did he?
Which no,
is that a dickheadish
screaming
thing?
She's at work, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, okay.
I think Casillas did it a few times, didn't he? So I thought it was a bit of a bell end move, but I think they just won the World Cup, mind.
How dare he show affection to the woman he loves? Eh?
Not on television.
Pete, you eschew any kind of physical contact with another human being, right?
Yeah, no, I protect. Why do you set it up like that? Because it's not. I'm the biggest hugger in the Ramble.
And, no, but you're. And that's why
that
your body
is
completely hair free like porcelain.
Say again.
It's like your body is completely hair free like porcelain. It's like a trophy, and you don't like anyone else touching it.
It's for his aerodynamism.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe you just said I'm the biggest hugger in the Ramble.
I'm the biggest hugger in the Ramble.
No, the biggest hugger in the Ramble.
I'd go with Pete as well.
I'm the biggest hugger in the Ramble. That's not true.
You're a squeezer.
This has gone really weird.
Pete, get off of Jim.
Pete, what do you think about Raymond Domenech proposing to his girlfriend after France were knocked out of a tournament? Yeah.
That's the high bar.
Yeah.
Are they still together?
She said no.
That's the gold standard.
He's the French Keegan.
Yeah, yeah.
Although he's a bit weirder than Keegan.
Yeah, but you know, you've got to adjust.
Keegan's likable, whereas Domenech is a bit of a strange one. Mm. Remember his book, Lonely at the Top?
How are we talking about this?
Huggins.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
Huggins and Muggins.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've still got a lot of admin to get through.
Yes. Betway's four to hug.
Yeah, it's time for Betway's four to score. Each week, we'll participate in this game, of course, with Betway for a chance to win a huge prize for charity. This week, I believe, I'm just going to double check this, but I'm fairly certain it is £175,000 jackpot. It's free to play, crucially, so there's nothing to stop you getting involved. All you need to do is pick the first goal scorer in Betway's four selected matches each round. And if you're correct, you win up to £175,000. Go to betway.com/4 to score. That's /4 and then to score. And of course, make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. And further T's and C's apply. It's a return for the Premier League this weekend, of course. Jim, you've got Chelsea v Newcastle, my friend.
Yes, I have gone for Tamara Abraham because I just think he's the most likely goal-getter in that squad. And also, I think he'll have wanted to be involved in Sofia and maybe a little bit sort of just ready to get back out there and show what he can do. So yeah. I think he's a good shout.
I think that's a good safe one. Home to Newcastle. He's obviously got a few goals already this season. Peter, Wolves v Southampton.
I need goals. Adama Traore, please.
Adama Traore, the flying machine.
Yes.
My start
form.
On the right. Absolute weapon of a pace merchant.
Yep.
Nice to see. I've got Crystal Palace v Man City. I'm going to get Marcus's back up by saying this. Annoyingly, I've gone for Raheem Sterling. For me.
That's out of left field, isn't it?
I know.
It? Well, you're really expecting Man City to get something there.
I know.
First goal.
Do you know what I thought? I thought the good thing about that is if it comes in, no one else would have chosen it.
No, yeah.
Because everyone's expecting a big Crystal Palace win. Marcus, you've got the big one. You've got Man United v Liverpool.
Yeah, I've also bucked the trend and gone for Roberto Firmino.
There we go. So that's Tammy Abraham, Adama Traore, Raheem Sterling and Roberto Firmino. There are selections for Betway's 4-to-score feature this weekend. It's free to play. You can win up to £175,000. Go to betway.com/4-to-score. But please do bet the responsible way.
Yes. Now it's time for Go for Gold!
So the heat is on and the time is right. It's time for you, but you to play the game.
Glold. It's time for Go for Glold, people. Joshua Stevenson with the clues this time round. I'm from Sydney, if that matters, he says.
Trying to get matters. In our heads.
Of course it matters. Hi, Pete. That is not a clue. I was born on the 9th of March, 1978. This one's a tough one, guys, so I'm looking
9th
for...
9th of March, 1978.
I'm looking for performance here, guys.
All right.
Well, let's work together then. So he's 41.
Stop. John Aloisi.
No.
Aloisi. Johnny Aloisi.
Johnny Aloisi. Shit. I represented my country 96 times, 61 as captain, and scored one goal.
Stop. Craig Moore.
No, not Craig Moore.
Stop. Sorry, did you say the emailer is Australian or the guy
from Sydney? No, I said he's from Sydney, if that matters.
Well, the emailer, not the player.
Yeah, no,
I wouldn't start with that, yeah.
That's why I thought I'd go to couple of... Okay, right, I wondered if...
Stop. Is it Rafael Marquez?
No, it's not.
Oh, more than one international goal.
Yeah, he's scored a lot, didn't he?
Loser.
I represented 6 clubs in England, playing in the Premier League for clubs such as West Ham, Everton and Blackburn Rovers.
Stop.
Go on.
Go on.
Have a little spin.
Is it Brett Emerton?
Oh! It's no Brett Emerton.
Stop. Nice, like it.
Benny McCarthy.
No, not Benny McCarthy.
One goal.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Jim, disrespectful to a fine goal scorer.
Unbelievable. In 2006, I helped my country qualify for its first World Cup in 32 years, scoring in a penalty shootout.
Stop.
Against...
Is it Ryan Nelson?
It is.
It's not Ryan Nelson.
Oh, I thought you heard that.
I'll finish the clue. In 2006, I helped my country qualify for its first World Cup in 32 years, scoring in a penalty shootout against Uruguay.
Stop. Stern John?
Not Stern John, no. Lovely to hear his name, though.
Against a penalty shootout against Uruguay to qualify, did you say?
Yeah.
That's got to be the playoff, would it? Would that be Australian?
It's got to be someone from Oceania. It's got to be from that, whatever that federation is called.
Oceania, baby. Outside of England, I've also played for teams in Turkey, the UAE, Australia, and Japan. Sugoi.
Excuse me. Oh, man. I think, do you know what? I think he's got to be Australian. I think he has to be.
In 2007, I was made permanent captain of West Ham, despite having been at the club for less than 6 months. Not like West Ham, is it?
Well, hang on.
Oh, stop. Is it Winston Reid?
No.
It's not Winston Reid. No.
He's still playing. He's Kiwi, isn't he?
Yeah, he's still playing.
So, yeah,
as well.
2010, though, over the qualifier.
Oh, that's right, yeah, of course.
Because
Final clue?
Hang on, West Ham.
West Ham.
Wouldn't
West
be.
I'm getting confused. 2010, aren't I here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
2006.
I'm back to where I started. Carry on.
One last clue, guys.
Go for it.
Do you guys want to chip in?
I'm not sure if he is Australian or not.
No, I don't know.
In 2003, I was widely and probably presumably widely as well, criticised for a dangerous tackle in a game between Blackburn Rovers and Liverpool.
Is it Kevin Muscat?
It's not Kevin Muscat, no.
Lucas Neal.
Yes!
Lucas
Neal! I thought you had that.
That was an excellent game.
Yeah, that was very good.
I'm going to be truly sick of that music by the end of the tour.
It had to be Lucas,
every night.
To be Lucas I thought Neil. You had it when you started. As soon as you said Dangerous Era, I thought I remember.
But you know what? It had to be Lucas Neil because we had named every single Australian player from Australia and New Zealand.
Who hadn't scored that many.
That was a brilliant set of clues. Who was it who sent those in?
It was Josh Stevenson from Sydney, if that matters. Turns out it kind of did.
Josh, that was fantastic.
He broke Jamie Carragher's leg.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember. I remember.
It is no doubt what I have done is disgusting.
Disgusting.
That's right.
There's no doubt the state of my leg is disgusting.
Oh, no. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the preview show sponsored by Betway. Of course, tomorrow I'm back with Greatest Games with Jonathan Wilson. Get your luggles around that.
It's been a fine week for Football Ramble Daily. Jules and Andy were great. Ramble Meets was really fun. OTC was great too. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.
There we are. Luke Moore, Pete Donaldson, Jim Campbell and me. We say goodbye.
This was a Stakhanov production.